This is LGRadio.online. I'm Leo Green. Welcome to In Conversation. Previously in this series, we revisited the conversation my late father, Benny Green, had with the great Tony Bennett. And when I was growing up, I used to love accompanying him, sometimes with my siblings, to the various TV and radio studios or restaurants or wherever it was that he would be interviewing a whole range of people about their lives, mixed in amongst the childhood memories that the passing of time has drenched in fog are those times that stick out clearly. I can remember, for example, round about the age of 11, being handed the cricket bat of the then current England captain and hardly being able to lift it up. Many years later, after the sporting career of that particular England captain had come to an end, he would end up having gone from performing at Lord's to sitting in the House of Lords. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about. Anyway, one of the interviews my father conducted towards the end of the last century, only about 18 months or so before he passed away, was with Paul McCartney. And it was a fascinating conversation, which I'd like to share with you now. At the time, Paul had launched his incredible project in Liverpool, which had seen his old school transformed from a crumbling down derelict mess to one of the greatest art schools in the modern world. The conversation began, though, with Paul recalling his own memories from having attended the school in its original incarnation and the basic music education that he'd received there.
We had a period called music. That was as much as we got. We got one period, and you went in this room, the whole class sat around on chairs, the teacher came in, he put a record on, Beethoven or something, and he went out.
Which was fable.
So the minute he got out, we posted a guard on the door, took the record off, and had fun till he came back. So I never learned a thing. I never learned anything. In fact, I didn't like anything to do with music, except the kind of music I heard at home. Because my dad used to be in a jazz band when he was a kid. He had a thing called Jim Max Jazz Band. And he played trumpet and piano. He was the bloke in the family who played at the family do's. It was my dad. And I kind of took that over later when he got a bit of arthritis. So by then I'd learned a little bit through the Beatles and stuff. I learned chords. So I could play, you know, Red, Red Robin.
How in a red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
Babyface.
Baby face, you got the cutest little baby face.
I had this lovely Uncle Ron amongst all a lot of my lovely relatives. And Uncle Ron, when I was on the piano, New Year's Eve, obviously I'd get there early and it'd be just warming up. Ron would get there and he said, do you know Carolina Moon? I said, yeah. He said, well, don't play it. He said, wait till I give you the nod. So the evening would wear on and I'd be doing baby face, all the stuff, you know, get me going. About half 11, when everyone was tanked up, Ron would just sort of lean over to me, tap me on the shoulder, he'd say, now. And I had to go into Carolina Moon. And he used to want to choose the moment.
Carolina Moon keeps shining.
My musical education, I think, came from my dad, really. The school, that school end of it, or piano lessons, I just couldn't get interested in. I think, you know, there was probably little recorders, triangles and stuff like that. You can vaguely remember that. I say, at home, my dad played the piano by ear. And that was, I used to lie on the carpet and just listen to him for hours and hours. And he had a friend of his called Freddie Rimmer who came around, and he idolised Freddie. And my dad would say to us, he said, now this bloke coming around, he really can play piano, you know, because my dad would disparage himself a little bit. I think what it was, he used some juicy chords, and my dad loved these juicy chords. But my dad would play things like Stairway to Paradise, Paul Whiteman. Dun, 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 da, 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 da. And in fact, many, many years later, when we were the Beatles, who were very successful by then, and he'd come along, he was very proud, obviously. He'd come along and he'd say, son, he said, you know, you ought to do Stairway to Paradise with the Beatles.
I think, Dad, I'm not so sure it's in the groove anymore, you know.
We were were doing this, listening for some of this stuff for the Beatles anthology the other day, and me and George Harrison, George was around then, you know, because he was a mate. He said, listen, and we had put it on one of our early little songs. We nicked those chord changes. Consciously used it as an intro. Well, the best story about my dad, I don't know if you've heard, it's a bit sort of famous one I tell about it, was when John and I had just written She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah.
She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we came in out of the back room, and he was in the living room watching the telly and stuff, and because he'd been a musician, he was very sympathetic if we ever needed to rehearse. We could make all the row we wanted next door. He didn't mind, whereas the other fellas' parents and we were a bit fussy about it.
Yeah.
But he knew the game a bit. So we just done She Loves You. So we always played it to whoever was there. So it was my dad. Hey, Dad, listen to this. She loves you, yeah, 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 yeah. And he's listened to it carefully. He said, that's very nice, son. He said, but just one thing. He says, there's enough of these Americanisms around. He says, couldn't you sing She Loves You? Yes, yes, yes.
You're listening to In Conversation here on lgradio.online. I'm Leo Green, and we're just listening in to a conversation my late father Benny Green had with Paul McCartney about 20, 25 years ago. The conversation drifted back to Paul recalling his own school days in the 1950s.
I got the 11 plus and went to this school, which was then called the Liverpool Institute High School for Boys. And I went there. Arthur Askey also went there. In fact, I sat at a desk with A. ASCII scratched into it. It was a good old school, you know. I mean, when I was there, I was aching to get away from it, like most kids, you know. But once I got away from it and got into the Beatles, I realised that it had given me a really good start for a kid off an estate. You know, we didn't have that much money. So I got quite a kind of classical education from this place. And years later, I went back, just on a nostalgic trip, and found it in ruins. The roof had come off, I think some of the local lads had the lead off, and it had a beautiful parquet floor that was like bubbling up. It was just going, you know. So I just started to think, we've got to do something about it. It was two strands that came together. One of the strands was when the riots happened in Liverpool. Being from Liverpool, I was kind of disturbed, you know. It was something that I'd never seen when I'd grown up. It's a feature of modern life, and we're all disturbed by it. And because it was my hometown, I talked to a lot of lads that I'd known and stuff from the area, which is now called Toxteth. It used to be called the Dingle. And I had a lot of friends there and stuff. And through music, I knew quite a few black lads. So I was talking to a friend of mine who I met. And I said to him, what do you reckon was the problem there, you know? And he gave me his opinion on it. They actually thought it was police harassment. So after the riots, I was a bit disturbed, like a lot of people, that, you know, what was going to happen in Liverpool. I was talking to a friend, and he said, you know what Liverpool needs? Some kind of fame school or something. And I'd heard millions of suggestions for what might be good for Liverpool. Well, this was the only one that really stuck in my brain. I thought, you know, that just could be a good idea. So then when I went up to look at the school, I was thinking, this must be saved, you know, it's an old, beautiful old building. It's where Ringo used to live. The school is a couple of miles away from there. And when I last went through it to one of these big opening ceremonies that we had, I drive through the rough area, you know. And I was saying to the guys when I got to the school, I said, you know, we've really got to kind of do something more than just publicise the school. Because driving through those areas, if I was a lad from that area, I wouldn't think I deserved to go to this big posh school on the hill. I said, we've got to do something. And actually, we are doing something. We're going to do kind of reach out things, going into the area saying, hey, you know, this is yours too. It's not just, you know, there's scholarships to this place. You can tell a joke, you can play an instrument, you can sing great. It seemed something that I could contribute to. The minute it had to be science or something like that, you're in the curriculum. So we had to rebuild it. So I took a few people around it, you know, from the government and said, look, you know, this really needs saving, doesn't it? There wasn't an awful lot of help forthcoming early on. So we decided we had to raise funds. So we had to raise a lot of money, basically, which we set about doing, and over about 7 years, we've managed to do it. we got an early donation that I wrote to a lot of people, including the Queen. And I had to get advice on how you address the Queen. I think my letter opened by your humble troth or something like this. They said, you've got to write that. You can't just write dear ma'am or something.
Yeah.
By my humble troth and all that. Anyway, I just put it. I said, you know, if you would, yes, I feel very strange as an ordinary bloke writing this letter to you. But if you, we've got a great school, and if you give us a donation. And she did. She was, well, she gave us an early donation, which was lovely, really. So that started the ball rolling. And then we got funding in from like Europe, and I wrote to a lot of people in America, people like Eddie Murphy, the comedian. He was beautiful, Eddie. He gave the top American donation. I don't think he was by any means the richest bloke I wrote to, but he was behind the idea. I wrote to all sorts of people, you know, and got various responses. In the end, we ended up qualifying for the City Challenge scheme. So Liverpool was part of all of that. So our project became a bit of a flagship for that, because there were a few other things that needed to be saved as well. You know, the local Philharmonic needed refurbishing, and you know, the whole area needed money. But it was good, you know. We eventually got the money and put a lot of work into what kind of school it could be. One of the reasons we was 18 and over was that we have more freedom then. If you get below that age, the government comes in with all its requirements for the curriculum and all the rest of the stuff.
Yes.
So they were very glad. They said, well, they're sort of finding out off me what I envisaged. And I was saying, well, I think maybe it's older kids and give them just a start, just that, those few years just before you get in the business. So we were very pleased to hear that, because it meant that we were a little bit more on our own. And what I would do, because I was on tour and stuff, I mean, I was touring the world while this was all going on, you know, I wasn't actually there. But what I'd be doing would be raising funds, getting people like Grundig to come in. They came in with a lot of heavy donations, and Japanese, if I was in Japan, I'd tell them about it and try and get funding off people like Yamaha and people like that, you know, because it interfaces quite nicely with what they do anyway, you know, it makes sense. So the blokes who actually got the teachers and stuff, well, I really just talked about what I thought was the area that we ought to be in. And then they probably got more practical than I would have been, you know, and found some very good people. So we've got a very good team, a couple of whom are American. There's the old school auditorium is now, it's a proper working theatre. And I was in St. Joan there. I was one of the assessors for the Apple.
Burner.
But my only memory, though, is I got cheered as I went on because I had slightly longer hair than normal. I mean, it's much shorter than it is now, kind of thing. Yeah? I mean, but it was then, it was seen to be quite long hair. So, you know, a few wags and
You're listening to In Conversation here on lgradio.online. I'm Leo Green, and we're just enjoying a conversation my late father Benny had with Paul McCartney. Paul shared how, after many years of raising both money and awareness, was able to set up a world-class art school in Liverpool. With the funds raised and all the building work finished, the moment finally arrived for the doors to open.
I'll tell you what happened. I went up there. The real opening was the Queen, which was just a few weeks ago. But then before that, we had the original inauguration, which I was kind of part of. And I went up to do that. There were a few luminaries from Europe. There was George Martin. There were a lot of very good people, a lot of very good friends, and they all did speeches. But I thought, well, because, as you say, because I've been on this stage, because I know this space, I thought, well, I won't make up a speech, I'll just wing it. So I got up there, and it was quite easy at first, and I just I got a nice round of applause and went up there. I said, well, you know, this place brings back so many memories for me, you know. Look towards the headmaster's offices, some of them painful, you know, not so good. But generally, I'm very proud to be here and for this to happen. And I looked up into the auditorium where there's audience up there. And I said, well, in fact, I said, this reminds me of a time when my mum and dad came here when I was in the play. And my mum and dad are both dead now. And as I said the words mum and dad, not having prepared this, I caught myself out. And I totally got emotional. And I was about to cry. I mean, if I hadn't been in front of all those people, I would have just wept. I said, my mum, dad, and it went. I said, well, I'd better stop this now, or I'm going to be bloody crying. I said, you know, banged the desk and then got on with the thing. And it was lovely because the lights dimmed and I finished my speech and I'm just about, you know, I hadn't actually cried, but I'd shown some emotion. A lot of people later said, you know, I'm glad you did, because I was just about to. You know, so a lot of people, very emotional thing. But I sat down and I was just gathering myself and I was getting it all back together. And a group of about 15 kids, students, were sitting behind us while I'd be doing the speech. And 15 of them stood up and they started a cappella to do this thing that they'd arranged, this song. And it was lyrics by Kilbrand. It was, I can't remember it, but it's about your children are not yours. But it's very poignant, very deep, particularly when you've got kids, you know, it's very wonderful lyrics.
Your children are not your children. They are the sons and the daughters of lies longing for a son.
And they were singing, man, they were in tune, they were in time, they were just like angels. And I'm looking at George Martin, we're looking, we couldn't believe the standard. Well, that did it. The combination of the emotion and the music, well, I'm anyone's, you know, and I'm oh my God, I was thanking the Lord that the lights were down. I'm streaming away. There's a few of the kids who are not singing, they're streaming away. It's got us all, you know.
Yeah.
When the lights come up, I just about got my hanky out. But it was wonderful, you know, that's the kind of thing the space did for me, you know, because actually what it reminded me was that it gave me hope. It made me see that, like, out of Liverpool and out of a poor family with really no major prospects, anyway, no inherited prospects anyway, that going to this school had made me realise you could get anywhere. You know, there had been blokes who'd gone to this school, like I say, Arthur Askey, there had been high commissioners from India. I was very proud to be giving these kids this chance. The same thing, you know, it had an echo for me, because you always do have this feeling if you make it, and you make it as big as the Beatles made it, that it'd be nice to put something back, you know. But you can never always just find the place. People have been saying to me, you should open a car factory up here. I thought, oh yeah, so they're going to produce some lemon, and the factory closes 2 years later, and we've got unemployment on our hands even more. So it had to be an idea that actually gelled with me. Because we'd said it was not necessarily for academic people. In fact, it wasn't an academic qualification. What we do is we hold auditions. So we go to certain areas, and there will just be an audition announced. Anyone can come along. And then they kind of show us their wares. Then they get to like a knockout thing. You get then the 20 that look like the hopefuls. And then the blokes from the school ask them questions, talk to them, why do you want to do this? So it's like an interview situation. And if someone's got an outstanding talent, so they're a great sax player, but they haven't got a lot up top, that counts, you know, the sax playing is what counts. It doesn't matter, you know, you don't have to be brilliant, as we know, you know, enough musicians.
That's Paul McCartney talking to my late father, Benny Green, about Paul's art school in Liverpool. Before we finish off this edition of In Conversation here on lgradio.online, let's hear Paul outline his plans for the school.
What we're doing is we're starting off modestly, so it's just over 100 or so, and then each year we're just hoping to sort of build it up. So I think we're looking for, in the end, for about 400. And then the other thing we're doing, we've got some very interesting stuff, and it's all just working its way through this year. I mean, I'll be in a better position in a couple of years to tell you what it's all about, because we're experimenting a lot. But we've got distance learning courses, so that if you're some old bloke who suddenly wants to learn how to play bass or wants to learn a course in the blues or something, We're hoping to provide for people like that, you know, so not necessarily young kids all the time. But it's quite interesting, you know, the way it's being put together. There's, I think it's got a musical emphasis just because of my connection, and it seems to be a lot of people want to go that route. What they do, anyone who goes there has to do what they call the core route. And so you, even if you're just a musician, you have to learn little things about deals and management, which is very good. So it means you come out of it, you don't get immediately ripped off for your publishing. It's just a little thing everyone has to go through, which is sort of like a general course, and then you spin off from that and specialize. We have acting, dancing, and there's the music. We also have some interesting other courses, because, see, when I was going out on tour a couple of years ago, if we do these big stadium things where you've got 60,000 a time, like in America or South America somewhere, we take out 140 people. I take a crew of 140 people, and that's serious employment. So these days, when you talk about a roadie, he's not just a guy who humps the amp. He's actually got to know what he's doing on computers. There's very sophisticated technology out there now, as you know. So we're teaching, people make fun of us. A couple of my mates make fun of, oh, you're teaching roadies, you know. It's on the edge of the comic thing. But in actual fact, it's quite serious. The nice thing I like about it is that what I'm hoping for is that the actors and the dancers are going to get together with the musicians, with the roadies, with the lighting people. And there's even management courses. I met a little Japanese girl when I was up there. She said, I hope you're going to come and talk to us, you know. And I said, what course, you know? She said, management. And so she's come all the way from Japan to learn a sort of theatrical management thing. So it's an amazing mix of people. What I'm hoping to do in the next year, once we've just got to let the dust settle and let them get on with it, because, you know, it is a school, right? You can't keep telling them what to do. They've got to find their own level. Because it's the students who find the level, inevitably. What I'd love to do is put on a production using a couple of the actors, you know, get somebody like Willie Russell.
Absolutely, on your own musical.
Get Willie to write some dialogue, because Willie does musicals anyway. Willie's there, one of the boys, go begging with them, say, come on, write some words. Then we get the kids themselves to write some songs. I'll vet them, I'll say, that's not very good, go and fix that one up. We get the dancers to do the dancing, etc., etc. So, you know, it's fascinating. And my dad always used to look at me, because when people come on the telly, I was one of these blokes who kind of would, I said, oh, he shouldn't have done that. He should have done a fast number first. I was always producing the telly. You know, my dad spotted me. He said, you'll be a producer one of these days. I think he meant theatrical producer. You know? But I ended up producing records and stuff. But so one of these days I might be able to put on a production there. We have got diverse talents, you know, under the one roof, and I'm hoping they'll all kind of cross-fertilise, you know. But the things I've been to has been focused on singing, and I say, I certainly haven't heard anyone remotely out of tune. These kids are spot on, and I mean, you know, it's not that easy just to stand up and someone gives you a ding, and you hit that note.
Yes.
They're really very good. We've got some interesting kids there. I'm making it a point really not to talk about individuals too much at the moment, because it's just their first year. But there's some interesting one. When they did the auditions in Norway, they got Grieg's grandson. He's into rap. Now, there's something, you heard it here.
Yeah.
Yes, you heard it here first. That was Paul McCartney talking to my late father, Benny Green, in conversation here on lgradio.online. Thanks for listening. And don't forget, please do check out our website for details of all our shows. You can, of course, listen to that again via our Listen Again page. If you want to drop me a line, you can do so either via the message board on the website, or if you'd rather email me directly, the address is info@lgradio.online. This is LG Radio.online. Thanks for listening.